Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is the Sports Edge with Rick Wolf on your flagship station for New York sports. The Fan, Sports Radio 66 and 101.9 FM, WFAN, New York.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the early bird edition of Rick Wolf's Sports Edge. I'm your host, Rick Wolf. Now, starting this morning and for the next 6 months during the NFL season, we'll be starting the show at 7:30 on Sunday mornings, and we'll go right through to 8:30. Now, everything else stays the same. We're still going to cover all the timely and important topics in the world of youth and amateur sports, and of course, sports parenting. And of course, we'll be taking your calls and comments at 1-877-337-6666. Now, on this morning's show, I'm happy to announce to welcome back Dr. Eric Small, pediatric sports medicine specialist at the Icahn School of Medicine. Dr. Small is one of the leading medical experts when it comes to kids who play sports. Now, Dr. Small has four kids of his own, all of whom have played a variety of sports through high school into college, including baseball and tennis. So he's not only a top pediatric physician, but he's also a sports parent as well. In any event, I thought I'd ask the good doctor about some of the so-called myths and misconceptions when it comes to kids and injuries. Everything from what sports parents need to know about, for example, weight training for their kids, to concerns about respiratory and asthma concerns, to injuries to a kid's arm from throwing baseballs, to the psychology of helping a youngster who was injured and has to remain on the sidelines for a few months or so. And, there's a lot of ground to cover here, and obviously I want to talk about all these topics and more, and of course we'll take your calls as well. Dr. Small, good morning, and welcome back to the Sports Edge.
Good morning. Thanks for having me this morning.
Of course, and thank you for getting up extra early on this Sunday morning. Now, Dr. Small, I mentioned a bunch of topics I want to cover. Let's start, for example, with weight training. Now, when I was growing up, and I'm sure for a lot of our listeners, you know, young athletes were always cautioned about lifting weights, and particularly lifting weights at too young an age, that this kind of action would strain one's ligaments, and that as you got older, that bulging muscles would hurt one's overall athletic development. But, you know, obviously times have changed. I don't want to get – give us your insights on what's going on with weight training, because a lot of parents want to know what they can do with their youngster, what's the right age, and what things they should be aware of.
Sure. That's one of the biggest myths in youth sports or youth sports medicine, is that weight training stunts one's growth. It actually is a perfectly safe activity, probably beginning as young as age 12, but there are some important considerations when your young athlete does weight train.
Mm-hmm.
He or she should not do maximum lifts, and probably most importantly, they should use proper form. So they should not do Olympic lifts, maximum lifts, and proper form is extremely critical.
Now, can you provide a little more detail about maximum lifts? And, I mean, obviously you would assume that if any parent wants a youngster to do this, and I'm sure a lot of dads in particular are saying, well, I lift, so I can just basically, you know, watch my youngster and guide, you know, him or her in what they're doing. So give me a little more detail about this.
Sure. When a young athlete at 11 or 12 is just starting out, he or she should not be, quote, working out with mom or dad. They should first have an evaluation on technique with what we call a sports medicine specialist in physical therapy, or a physician, or a certified strength and conditioning specialist. These are professionals who have taken courses, have degrees in the physiology of young athletes, and how to design a fitness or a weight training program. So when we talk about maximum lifts, we're talking about someone trying to lift, we'll say, a biceps curl 50 pounds one time.
Right.
You need to start out at a low weight, and every child is different, 5 pounds, 10 pounds, three sets of 10. That's the literature shows us that repetitions of 8 to 12, three sets of 8 to 12 is the way to go, and this is a perfectly safe activity. Once they get up to the higher weights and try to do one or two rep max, then their form deteriorates, and then they do get injured.
Doctor, I'm curious, do you advocate that the youngsters do this? Is this good as a part of their overall development? They should start lifting a little bit when they're 11 or 12? Is that something you suggest to your patients?
Typically not at 11 or 12 once they're reaching high school age, 13, 14, as part of their baseball training or football training. It can be done at 11 or 12, but the strength benefits are not as great because at 11 or 12, typically, most young athletes are pre-pubertal, and they don't have the testosterone surge, which will make the muscles bigger. They'll improve their strength by what we call enhanced neuromuscular control or enhanced efficiency, but it's something that they can do if it's done correctly. But I do advocate if your child is serious about sports in 8th, 9th, 10th grade, once they're older and they understand their sport and their body better.
Well, I mean, as I said, this is sort of to me like a sea change because for, you know, many years it was advocated not to have kids lift. And clearly this is now like a 180 where you're saying, well, yeah, you can start getting kids to lift as they get to be 13 or 14. And as you said, it has no detrimental effect upon, and this is always the concern, you know, about their ligaments or that kind of thing, cartilage, that this, even though the growth plates aren't affected in a negative way?
That is correct. Well, when the myths which started 20, 30 years ago that weight training can stunt the growth, that someone who's trying to do a maximum lunge or a squat and they had the wrong technique and they injured their ligaments and their growth plates in their back or their knee, that could lead to a bad injury. But when this is done correctly, there's actually, it's in the moderate injury risk compared to all sports. It would be if you took football, if you took soccer, baseball, tennis, it would be in the middle in terms of injury risk. So it's as safe. It's safer than contact sports in terms of injury risk.
Okay, and the reason why I wanted to start off with this topic this morning, and we're talking with Dr. Eric Small, is about the aspects of weight training as kids get into their teenage years. And let's take baseball, for example. You know, kids do a lot. There's always a concern these days about kids in their teens throwing too much, throwing max with their arm speed, ended up, there's a whole epidemic, as you well know, with Tommy John injuries. Tell me about, you know, in terms of, let's say, with baseball and pitchers in particular, and obviously there's going to be other sports as well, but let's focus for a second on baseball and concerns about the elbow or shoulder. At what point should a parent be concerned if they see their youngster is complaining about their elbow or shoulder as a teenage pitcher?
Pitchers these days are often pitching year-round. They take pitching lessons or coaching lessons.
Sure.
One of the things that we've learned over the years that is pitchers, they develop muscle imbalances. So the muscles at the front of their shoulder typically are stronger than their upper back muscles. So one would intervene or recommend if your child is interested in pitching, baseball pitching or even softball pitching, to strengthen those upper back muscles, which is, we call those scapular stabilizers, the trapezius, the rhomboids. So those exercises would be resistance band exercises, standing rows, seated rows, internal, external rotation of the shoulder, talking about weight training or resistance training of the small muscle groups. Not bulking up, but improving the muscular endurance. So a pitcher, one which we're not recommending, again, maximum weights, but with a pitcher, we're recommending 4 to 6 sets of 10 of repetitions of exercises to improve the muscular endurance of those shoulder muscles or those upper back muscles.
And again, I want to emphasize, you're talking about the upper back muscles to help support the shoulder and the arm, correct?
That's correct. So when we throw the acceleration and the force goes to the front of the shoulder, but our upper back muscles are the brakes of the body. So if those brakes are weak, there'll be more friction and stress to the front of the shoulder and even the elbow.
I got it. I mean, I'm very glad to hear you say these things because, you know, all the research or the conversation we've had on the show over the years about kids and throwing too much. I haven't heard anybody articulate the fact that the kids, especially in their teenage years, really need to build up their back muscles if they want to help prevent any serious injuries to their shoulder or their elbow. I think that is terrific advice. Anyway, we're talking this morning about the myths and misconceptions about kids playing sports and injuries. And my guest is Dr. Eric Small. He's a pediatric sports medicine specialist at the Icahn School of Medicine. We are going to take your calls at 1-877-337-6666 as we progress through our new start this morning here on the Sports Sheds at 7:30. And again, we go right through to 8:30. Back here on the Sports Edge, on the Early Bird Edition, starting at 7:30 now, going off the next 6 months. We're talking this morning with Dr. Eric Small, a pediatric sports medicine specialist at the Icahn School of Medicine here in New York City. And Dr. Small, before the break, we're talking about pitchers in particular and talking about weight training as well. And we've got other topics I want to talk to you too, but let's take a couple of calls here. At the 1-877-337-6666. Let's start with Ed Ward over in Elizabeth, New Jersey. Ed, good morning. You're on the Fan.
Good morning. Good morning, Rick. How you doing?
I'm good, Ed. How are you?
Good, thank you. I want to ask Dr. Small a question.
Go ahead.
Yes.
Ed, we lose you there? I think we lost Ed. So, Ed, give a call. Give a call back, Ed, and we'll get you right on again. Let's move on. Let's go over to Jack Smithlin over in Fairlawn. Jack, good morning. You're on the Fan.
How you doing, Rick?
I'm good, Jack. How are you?
I'm doing great. I love these early mornings.
okay. I'm glad to hear somebody does.
No. No matter what time you're on, I'll be up.
Attaboy. So, good.
Doctor, this is I've taught for over 40 years. 44 years in phys ed and health, and I coached for 40 years. And, you know, listening to you talk about the myths about, you know, weightlifting stunting your growth, I wish that my hundreds of parents who always fought me on it would be listening today. But and some of them probably are. But what I used to do is I had a weight training program in phys ed. We did weight training at the schools where I coached also with a trainer. But what I did is I did a program with body bars and bands. And what I always did is I always taught proper technique, never using a lot of weights. The heaviest bar that we used was 15 pounds. And we did a lot of the major muscle exercises, you know, not really working on the smaller muscles or the less important muscles, even though they are very important in every movement we make. So listening to you, it's amazing to hear it, and I wish a lot of people were listening to you. But doing bands and doing the bars, the body bars, it's very, very easy to teach proper technique, because when a kid is struggling with a weight, you know, it's tough to teach proper mechanics. One other thing I wanted to talk to you about is the way, and hopefully you'll get into this in your show, Rick and I've heard Rick talk about things like this with the parenting of athletes being injured and how quick these parents want to get these kids back on the field.
Yeah.
And if only they understood the importance of what it means to treat that injury the proper way, take the extra time to rest, especially with like hamstring strains and pulls. But that's something that I hope that, you know, you guys talk about
a little bit. I'm glad you brought that up, because I do want to get into that with Dr. Small. And Jack, thank you as always for the call.
You're more than welcome, Rick.
I'll talk to you soon. You know, and Dr. Yep. Small, let's talk about the psychology of this, because in this day and age, clearly when parents bring their youngsters in to see you, whether they are injured in whatever sport it may be, there's a psychology that you have to obviously embrace. Because you can see that the kid wants to get back on the playing field as quickly as possible, not only because the kid enjoys playing the sport as a competitive kid, but also because they can see that mom and dad want them back on the field, and they realize that if the kid's injured, is going to sit out for 2, 3, 4 months, that's not good. So there's a psychology. How do you handle those expectations from the parents and making sure the kid doesn't come back too soon?
Great. That's an excellent question. We'll take the little league pitcher who's 12 years old, and they have, quote, the Cooperstown tournament or some important tournament coming up.
Yep.
And we have to look at the big picture. So if they have a growth plate injury or what we call a stress injury to the elbow, they may not be able to pitch for 3-4 months, but they may be able to play first base or second base, or they may be able to bat. So the big picture is what is the injury and what they can do and can't do. What I try to do with every patient and parent is tell them what the injury is and what the expectation is, what's the risk and the benefit. So when they understand that they can do something and not do damage and the recovery will be fine, they're fine with that. Typically, the child is fine with that. Some of the parents are much more disappointed or angry than the child.
Yes, but I'm sure.
Usually, if I go through that, we're looking at 2-3 months of not pitching, but if you can get back to playing first base or being an extra hitter, designated hitter, they're usually fine with that. And then we work on skills, strength, which we were talking about before. They work on skills in their batting that they hadn't been used to doing before.
All right, so I think that's right to the heart of the issue. She said the kids usually are okay being told that, well, look, you've injured this this part of your body. It's going to take some time to heal. But again, it's the parents who are saying, yeah, but doc, you know, we got that big tournament coming up and, you know, what can he or she do to play and help out with the team? And, you know, clearly the parents are aware that maybe, you know, things can get sped up or expedited. But that's where you need this obviously come in as the voice of common sense and say, look, if you come back too soon, you're going to have other issues down the line. How do you handle that when parents sort of begin to balk at your advice?
Well, I have been doing this 25 years, and there's research behind that about short-term and long-term complications.
Yep.
It's hard for people to look a year, 2 years down the road. When you have a 12, 13-year-old, there's many more opportunities in high school and hopefully college to play that sport. So they do understand that maybe not the first visit, but when I follow them up in 2 or 4 weeks and there's progress and then we clear them to do something, they understand the big picture. But what I do and what parents need to understand in children, that with an injury you can't expedite it by a week, 2 weeks. It's just got to take its natural course. We have to do the relative rest. We have to do the proper rehabilitation and gradually get back to the activity.
Now, I have to ask you, because I mentioned at the opening that you have 4 kids who all play a variety of sports, including baseball and tennis, and have done so at the, you know, collegiate level, so they're pretty accomplished. You know, how, as a sports dad, as a sports parent, how did you handle these situations with your own kids?
Well, the conversations over dinner every night, you know, if there's an injury or a pain, and we take care of it right away. The problem that one gets is someone has an injury, a child has an injury, and they want an answer right away, and
yep.
They will go to emergency department or urgent care center, and they're fine for emergencies, but not for the big picture. So catching an injury, catching a pain early, so going back to pitching or perhaps talking about a soccer player who has chronic shin pain or knee pain, it's not about doing everything or nothing. It's about scaling back on what they're doing. And that's critical to express to the parents and the children. They may, if we catch the injury early, they could probably still pitch or do soccer or whatever activity, but they need to cut back on their training or their pitching or their running by 50% or by some amount.
Yeah, and I would gather, as you said, I would think that it's the youngster who's feeling the pain or is feeling the pinch or feeling whatever is uncomfortable, they are okay. Because obviously from the youngster's perspective, where they're 6 or 16, they're figuring, well, so I sit out for a few weeks, I'll be better, and I have an endless number of games I can compete in. But it's the parents who unfortunately come back and say, yeah, but, you know, that's a big game coming up, and, you know, the clock is ticking, and can't you do something? Are you really in much pain? Can't you suck it up? Can't you, you know, the old school mentality, like, you know, fight through the pain. And I like to think that we've evolved to the point where that kind of old school mentality doesn't really make sense anymore. If the youngster is hurt, then you know, let them take the time off to heal and rest and to get better rather than try to complicate matters by coming back too soon.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things I like to talk with families and young athletes do, they know the difference between soreness and pain. It's okay to have some soreness during or after a workout, but they shouldn't be having pain such that they threw a ball, they kicked a ball, and there's a jolt of pain. So that's one thing we talk about. Another thing we talk about, has their performance decreased? Has their throwing velocity gone down? Has their running speed gone down? Because those are signs that the injury is impacting their performance. So when it's explained that way, there's more buy-in from the parents.
Yeah, those are good points. Well, look, we're talking this morning with Dr. Eric Small. We're talking about the myths and misconceptions of injuries with our kids and what you as a sports parent or as a coach really need to be aware of. I got a lot more topics I want to discuss with Dr. Small. We got to take a break. When I come back, we'll go back to our conversation, and we'll take your calls at 1-877-337-6666. Hey, back here on the Sports Edge, I'm your host, Rick Wolf. We're talking this morning about the myths and misconceptions regarding kids and sports injuries. My guest is Dr. Eric Small of the Icahn School of Medicine. He's a pediatric sports expert. Before I go any further, Dr. Small, how can people find you or contact you if they want to have their youngster come in and be evaluated?
914-666-7900, or they can just find me on the Mount Sinai website. I'm happy to see them in the office or speak on the phone.
Okay, great. And obviously, friends, we're taking your calls here at 1-877-337-6666. I want to talk to you for a few minutes about kids who play sports and have breathing concerns, asthmatic issues. It just seems over the years I've seen more and more of this, Dr. Small, and I think for a lot of parents and for coaches in the youth level, they get concerned. A kid comes off the field, says, I can't breathe, or whatever it might be. Now, kids, of course, who have been diagnosed with issues, I know they have inhalers, that kind of thing. But in general, what should parents and coaches know as to when this is really a serious concern?
Okay, great question. Well, about 10 to 15% of the population do have asthma, and 90% of children, adolescents who have asthma have what we call exercise-induced asthma or episodes of breathing problems. But the bigger concern is people, children, adolescents who play sports who've never been diagnosed with asthma, they have chest pain or they have shortness of breath, and they actually end up having exercise-induced asthma. So 10% of people who don't have a diagnosis of asthma or exercise-induced asthma have breathing problems with exercise. And oftentimes a soccer coach or a football coach will tell a 12 or 13-year-old, well, you're lazy, you're out of shape, that's why you have short of breath, or mm-hmm. you have chest pain. And quite the contrary, these are the kids who are high-achieving, and they're giving 110%, and they actually have a medical problem. So they need to be diagnosed and treated appropriately. The problem we sometimes see is, well, those children do not have asthma, and they're given an inhaler, or they have their older brother's inhaler, older sister's inhaler. So it's sometimes underdiagnosed, but sometimes overdiagnosed. And we got to get the kids who haven't been diagnosed or haven't been properly managed.
What about those situations where, you're a coach or you're a parent, and the kid doesn't have an inhaler, and the kid, you can see the fear in the kid's eyes that they're having a hard time catching their breath. What can you do to help calm them down? What can you do? Again, they have no inhaler. What can you do just to set them to relax and to regain a sense of balance and equilibrium?
Okay, this recently happened to me. I was covering the U.S. Open, the junior, and Flushing, the juniors, and I was called to courtside for difficulty breathing. And the young lady, she's 16, no history of asthma. It turned out she was having a panic attack, and she was also dehydrated, suffering heat cramps. So as a physician or even a parent, if there's no history of asthma, you don't want to give them an inhaler. God forbid they are having a heart arrhythmia or they're having a panic attack. That could make matters worse. So most important situation to handle, how to handle that, is to calm the adolescent down. Get them to breathe normally. Sometimes it can be quite difficult, but you don't want to give an inhaler to someone who's never used one before and does not have that diagnosis. So it's really to calm the situation down.
I mean, and this does happen a lot in the sense that, you see the kids having difficulty breathing, and it's just said you don't want to be in a situation where you're making things worse. And you mentioned just a minute ago about heat concerns, muscle cramps, that kind of thing, dehydration. Talk about that as well, because, you know, we all know about, we get to around here in August, particularly with football practice, there's always concerns about kids and dehydration. Is that something that your parents should be aware of? I mean, for example, with muscle cramps, I've always been under the impression that kids get muscle cramps because either they're just overexertion, they're not accustomed to that kind of physical stress and strain. Does liquid beforehand hydrating, does that prevent muscle cramps? You know, what are the again, going back to the myths and misconceptions? Sure. What should we know about our kids in the heat and so on and so forth?
Right, there are what we call heat muscle cramps, where a child, adolescent, doesn't have enough calories in their muscles, and they're caused by lack of calories or lack of storage forms in the muscle, and there's also dehydrated muscle. So that is definitely a cause of muscle cramping. And what we recommend is that athletes who have a history of heat cramps or, quote, muscle cramps, is that a half hour before they do football or soccer, that they drink 8 to 12 ounces of water or diluted sports drink or diluted juice to ensure they're adequately hydrated, and ideally that they're drinking every half hour to an hour 8 ounces of fluid, not a caffeinated product, but water or a sports drink or diluted fruit juice. The other part of the muscle cramping can be caused by repetitive sprinting, i.e. in football. If they ran the ball 10 times in a row, yep, they're not used to doing that. So it can be called cause of muscular fatigue. So we have to prevent that as well by proper conditioning. But so we look at the hydration, the nutrition, as well as the training level of that child.
What about, you mentioned about muscle fatigue, you know, on a hot day, at halftime, is that when the kid also rehydrates and gets some sort of 8 or 10, 12 ounces of water or sports drink? Does that help at that point?
Would help at halftime. And at halftime, it would be good to have a 300-calorie snack, which would be like a half of a peanut butter sandwich or some yogurt and a piece of fruit. But once they're in the throes of a game, even if it's halftime, they don't want to do that.
Right.
That would definitely help at halftime. But if they're on the field and they're, quote, cramping, just giving them water right at that time won't help them that minute. It may help them in a half hour, an hour later.
Let me ask you about this, too, Dr. Small. You know, when I was growing up, I don't ever recall in my teenage years into my 20s ever having a hamstring concern. And I know it seems that more and more these days, kids in particular are having hamstring injuries or concerns about hamstrings. Certainly, as one gets older, hamstring, those are major concerns. But have you encountered concerns with kids and hamstring pulls?
Yes. That's a great question. 20 years ago, 20, 25 years ago, when I was starting practice, I probably saw half a dozen hamstring injuries under 16
yeah.
Year. Now I probably see one or two a week. And what we definitely believe that's too is they're training harder. They're doing overtraining in terms of their cross training lunges and squats, too many with higher weight. They're doing too many sprint training and they're running 7 days a week. They're running too much. They're not doing other sports. So it's an overuse thing from the too much running or too many lunges and squats. So definitely seeing that more now compared to 10, 20 years ago.
And speaking, you mentioned that magic word there about specialization. I have to assume that, I'm sure we talked about this on the show some years ago when you were on talking about over-specialization, that you probably don't want kids to specialize when they're starting out in one sport. You'd rather see them play a variety of sports. Is that a fair assumption?
Totally a great, fair assumption, and it's medically accurate. When a child just does soccer year-round or just does baseball year-round, the muscles that they use tend to be injured, and their counter muscles, their opposite muscles we talked about before, the baseball pitcher, is stronger in the front of their shoulder and they're weaker in the back compared to their non-throwing arm. And a soccer player, their quadriceps are huge and very strong, and their hamstrings are relatively weak. So doing other sports helps counterbalance that overuse.
Yeah, I'm not surprised to hear you say this because, after all, we like to think we've evolved to the point where we're getting the word out to enough parents now saying, yeah, we know you're tempted to have your kids specialize in just one sport, but it's really contraindicated when it comes to developing all the entire body and developing all their skills, and you run the risk of having the kid having more of a concern with one particular injury from that over-specialization. Let's go back to our callers. Let's go up to Dobbs Ferry in Westchester. Evan, good morning. You're on the Fan.
Good morning, Rick. Yeah. First of all, I love listening to you on Sunday. It's such a unique show.
Thank you. Very much appreciated
as a parent. Question for Dr. Small. My son is 17. He's a catcher on the varsity baseball team out here. And, you know, the thing with Northeast baseball is they don't really, you know, they don't actually play during the, you know, fall and winter, particularly the winter because of the weather. And then they come, you know, come February, the coach throws them in a gym, and, you know, now we're up to March, and we all know what the weather's like in March. And I feel that what I've noticed is he comes home, and obviously he's got his elbow may hurt or, you know, a little shoulder, and he just, quote, you know, keeps playing through it, and it kind of builds eventually, I guess, he builds up the strength by the end of the season. Are there any exercises that you would recommend to build up either the elbow or the shoulder during this time period so that when he first hits the gym and then the field, he's not overdoing it, or at least he's building something up?
Yes, excellent question. You're saying they go from 0 to 160. They're not throwing at all in November, December, but two part answer to your question. Starting in December, January, if you can get an indoor facility, throwing twice a week would be helpful. But in terms of what you could do at home or in the gym, doing what we call rotator cuff and scapular stability exercises with bands and with free weights for 3 months prior, that will help prepare the arm and prevent injury, improving the upper back strength, improving the internal, external rotation strength of those rotator cuff muscles. So absolutely, that will help.
Oh, that's terrific. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Evan, thank you for the call and for the nice comments. Dr. Small, we're up against the clock here. We really sprinted through a bunch of topics this morning, and obviously I thank you for joining me. Is there, just before I let you go, and friends, if you do want to contact Dr. Small, again, he's at the he's a pediatric sports medicine specialist at the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai. Certainly you can track him down online. But, you know, I just want to ask you very quickly, because we've heard so much over the years about concussions. Is there anything that's new or different that parents need to know about concussions and their kids?
Well, what's new is that majority of children who suffer a concussion do recover in 10 days or less.
Mm-hmm.
But those who take longer to recover, we now know that different therapies can help, balance therapy and cognitive therapy, and people are not aware, the physician community and the parent community are not aware that there are therapies to do rehabilitation, like if you hurt your knee or your shoulder, you can do physical therapy. You have a brain problem, you may have concentration problems, balance, so one could do therapy for that and not just say rest, and that's going to help the problem.
Yeah, as I said, I'm glad you say and you mentioned that in most kids, the vast majority of kids who suffer a concussion are good to go after 10 days of sitting out. I think in all the concerns these days about the long-term implications, sometimes it's an oversight to say, look, you understand, kids do get better from concussions. They do get better within a matter of a week or two. So I'm glad you mentioned that. And again, Dr. Small, my thanks again. Obviously, a lot more to cover, but up against the clock. This time we'll get you on the show again without waiting for several years.
Okay, thank you very much, and enjoy this Sunday weather. Thank you.
Thanks, Dr. Eric Small. Again, one of the top pediatric sports medicine physicians in this area. All right, let me take a quick update with Pete McCarthy. When I return, I have a few final comments for you regarding youth sports and injuries. As I said, we cover a lot of ground here in a really sort of a sprint this morning, but they are important things. I just want to recap them, so stay with me. Hey, back here on the Sports Edge. First of all, I just thank you all for Getting up early this morning to check out the Sports Edge. Again, our new hours are from 7:30 to 8:30, and that's going to continue right through the rest of the fall into the early winter as we are involved with the National Football League. And I just, again, after mid-February, we go back to our normal hours of 8 to 9. But again, I do thank you for making this accommodation and setting your alarm clocks just a wee bit earlier to check out what we're talking about on the Sports Edge. And by the way, of course, you can always, as I mentioned to you all the time, you can post your own thoughts and comments, read my insights and opinions at AskCoachWolf.com. And if you happen to have missed the first part of the show this morning, you can always go to WFAN.com and find the link to the podcast. And you can, of course, go there and just link to my name and the Sports Edge. And you can get every show we do here on WFN.com as a podcast. Now, very quickly, and by the way, before I forget, I do have a surprise that I don't want to tip off too much of this surprise. But in the next few weeks, I'll tell you more about a project I'm involved in that I think you'll find fascinating, which obviously deals with sports parenting and deals with the topics we cover here on the show. Again, just I don't want to tip my hat too much, but it's something we're going to be talking about, as I said, as we get deeper into the fall. Just to recap Dr. Small and what some of the great points he made this morning about everything from weight training with kids. Yeah, he's saying you can have kids learn how to lift weights, but they have to be at least 12 or older. And at that point, particularly when they're starting out, they need to obviously be supervised by somebody who was trained when it comes to weightlifting and knows what they're doing with little kids. You can't overdo it because obviously the kids will benefit from the weight training, but only if they do it in a modest and a cautionary way, but it can be done. He also mentioned about kids and, you know, the difference between soreness and pain. If you're a youngster, parent, your kid is talking about being tired or some muscles being sore, that's one thing. That's okay. But if they're talking about actual pain, well, that's the telltale sign the body's saying something has to be done because I'm really hurting here. And that's a time that pain doesn't go away that you want to make sure you get it checked out with your pediatrician. Other thing I would mention about Dr. Small mentioned was, you know, exercise-induced asthma. The one thing I used to do when I was coaching kids in the youth levels in particular, at the very first practice, I made sure I gave a piece of paper, a handout to all the parents and said, please let me know of any concerns or medical issues that your youngster has, whether it might be the due of asthma or they are diabetic or whatever it might be. I, as the coach, need to have a heads up of what the concerns may be. I'm not trying to pry. I just want to know exactly what's going on in case something does happen during the course of the season and I have a sense of what I'm prepared to have to deal with. I think that's just common sense, and I think the parents also want to be able to know that they have a coach who is obviously involved in the health and welfare of their youngster. Again, these are basic concerns. And something that any coach starting out with coaching kids from ages 6 through and up to high into elementary into middle school really needs to know, because quite frankly, you know, we want to make sure we can do things that are of a preventive nature rather than have to deal with something of a crisis on the field during a game. Okay, that's going to do it for me in this edition of the Sports Edge. My thanks this morning to Antonio Grillo. Please stick around for the morning line. That is up next. I'll see you next Sunday at 7:30 right here on the Sports Edge.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.